One of the things you count on when you're a law-abiding citizen of a place like America or Britain is that the police won't show up at your office one fine morning, haul you away, and throw you into solitary confinement. Portland, Oregon does not seem a likely setting for such a draconian police action. Portland in the Pacific Northwest is an earnestly progressive place. San Francisco without the colorful characters. Canada without socialized medicine. Brandon Mayfield has a small one-man law practice there. The 38-year-old man served 8 years as a military intelligence officer in the U.S. Army. He had a top-secret clearance. He's married, the father of 3 daughters. He had never before been arrested. But one morning last May, a pair of FBI agents showed up at his office, handcuffed him, and took him away. They told him that his fingerprints had been found on a bag of explosives used in the Madrid, Spain train bombing that killed 191 people last March. It was a stunning bit of news to Mayfield. He hadn't been out of the country in a decade. He's never been to Spain. And if the fingerprints weren't enough, there was all this other stuff the FBI found out about Mayfield. He was a convert to Islam. His wife was from Egypt. She and the daughters covered their heads in the traditional Muslim way. The whole family attended services at a mosque. And he'd represented a man convicted of conspiring to wage war against the United States in Afghanistan. Represented him, mind you, not in his criminal case, but in a child custody fight. But wait, the FBI had more. Using secret court orders, they sneaked into Mayfield's home and office, searched through his belongings, and planted listening devices. And when they did their sneaking and peeking, they found the Mayfields had information about Spanish trains. They found a Koran. Reason enough, except those fingerprints on the bag of explosives? Well, a fingerprint, or part of a fingerprint. Ever since, there's been a lot of finger-pointing between Spanish police, who say they told the FBI they weren't certain of the accuracy of the fingerprint identification. And the FBI pointing back and saying, well, it was a pretty lousy, faxed copy you sent us. And back and forth, while Mayfield sat in jail. A commissioner of the Spanish National Police told the New York Times that he was struck by the FBI's intense focus on Mr. Mayfield. It seemed as though they had something against him, the Spanish official said. As it turns out, it wasn't Mayfield's fingerprint after all. It came from the finger of an Algerian man, described by Spanish officials as having ties with Al-Qaeda. And so it goes in America in our war against terrorists. Under the almost unassailable claim of protecting the country against terrorists, we've seen a decline in our civil rights to the point where a man like Mayfield can find himself thrust into a nightmare straight out of Kafka. What is all the more Kafkaesque about the Mayfield case is this. It appears the FBI realized early on it had made a mistake, but for reasons of bureaucratic self-protection, it was slow to right the wrong it was doing to Mayfield. An internal FBI investigation later laid the blame on one technician. Quote, once the mindset occurred with the initial fingerprint examiner, the subsequent examinations were tainted, the report said. Tainted. The lesson here is obvious and hundreds of years old. Bad things happen when bureaucrats are given extraordinary, unsupervised authority. The FBI finally did apologize to Mayfield and set him free after 2 weeks in jail, most of it in isolation. Which is better than the way the Army treated Captain James Yee. Yee, a graduate of the U.S. Army Military Academy at West Point, is also a convert to Islam. In fact, he became a Muslim chaplain in the Army. He was assigned to the prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where he ministered to the Muslim prisoners we hold there. Yee was arrested in 2003 and charged with having secret documents about the prison camp. The military let it be known that it believes Yee was part of a ring of Muslim spies at Guantanamo. 2 other Muslims, an airman and a civilian, were also charged. 1 case is still pending, but the charges against Yee and the airman were dropped. But not before the military investigators took Yee's life apart and made their findings public. In the course of trying to make the spying charge stick, The investigators found that Yeed had an affair, and he had pornographic images on his government computer. Not only was he a spy, but a dirty-minded one at that. The government eventually dropped the spying charges, which they said they couldn't prove, but only after Yee had spent 76 days in solitary confinement. The government did, however, punish Yee for the military offenses of adultery and misuse of a government computer. He left the army, and no one has ever apologized to him. Then there was the case of four Muslim men in Detroit accused of being a sleeper cell of Al-Qaeda terrorists. Their arrests, a week after the September 11, 2001 attacks, were hailed by President Bush and then Attorney General John Ashcroft, who said the men were, quote, suspected of having knowledge of the September 11 attacks before they happened. Eventually, two of the men were convicted of terrorism charges in the summer of 2003. But today, all have been set free, and it's the prosecutor who's under investigation. Even the Justice Department, for whom he works, thinks he misbehaved and trampled any number of civil rights. His boss has moved to have the prosecution set aside. Among other things, the Justice Department said its prosecutor withheld from the defense attorneys jailhouse statements by their key witness. That witness told another inmate he was lying at the trial. We'll never know if the four men were, in fact, a dangerous sleeper cell of terrorists or merely victims of a justice system gone badly haywire. In America, we don't usually look to our military to salvage the reputation of our legal system. In fact, for much of the post-9/11 era, the military has worked, however unintentionally, to convince the rest of the world that innocent until proven guilty is a hollow phrase if you're foreign and Muslim. The prison it runs at Guantanamo has, for many, come to symbolize a power-crazed America answering to no law except its own might. Hundreds of prisoners, we'll probably never know the exact number, have been held at Guantanamo with no charges against them, no lawyers to represent them, no independent judicial review of their plight. These rights are taken by Americans as birthrights, among the best of things that we inherited from Britain. By the first anniversary of the attacks on New York and Washington, the White House announced that the stream of prisoners being sent to Guantanamo, having been denied the protection of the U.S. Constitution, would not enjoy even the protections of the Geneva Convention on the treatment of prisoners of war. The military and its civilian bosses argue that terrorists aren't fighting fair, not like real soldiers, and hence forfeit the right to be treated fairly. Just this week, the New York Times reported that the International Committee of the Red Cross, quote, has charged in confidential reports to the United States government that the American military has intentionally used psychological and sometimes physical coercion tantamount to torture on prisoners at Guantanamo. Asked about the accusations in the report, a Pentagon spokesman told the Times that, quote, the United States operates a safe, humane, and professional detention operation. The original plan was to try these detainees before military tribunals. In those proceedings, they would not be allowed to see all the evidence against them, hearsay evidence would be permitted, and there would be no independent appeal from the tribunal's judgment. The military did assign two mid-ranking Navy lawyers to represent the prisoners. For months, the two lawyers had no access to any defendants, which normally would make it difficult for them to do their jobs. But Lieutenant Commanders Charles Swift and Philip Sundell stunned almost everyone by mounting what has been a surprisingly effective legal campaign. At the beginning of the year, they challenged the legal authority of the government to try the Guantanamo prisoners by military tribunal. Then in April, the two lawyers sued President Bush and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. They said the plans for military tribunals violate the Constitution, federal law, the Geneva Convention, and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. They argued that civil courts have the jurisdiction to hear challenges to the tribunals. And here's where the legal fights got interesting. Right now in the United States, there's an epic power struggle going on between the judiciary and the executive branch. Basically, the executive branch, the president, argues that it has the final authority over the treatment of people captured in the war on terror, whether they're foreigners or American citizens. In June, the most conservative Supreme Court in several generations slapped the president down, saying that, quote, a state of war is not a blank check for the president. Since then, there's been a lot of back and forth in the courts, and that epic struggle marches forward. If you're an American journalist, as I am here in Washington, all of this makes for stimulating times. Perhaps it's not a turning point in the same league with Thomas Becket versus Henry II, but it keeps us busy. It would be easier to maintain our resolute distance from the erosion of civil liberties, but for one thing. Now the government is throwing reporters in jail. In New England, a TV reporter got his hands on an FBI surveillance tape of what appears to be a crooked politician taking a bribe. When the reporter refused to tell a court how he got the tape, the judge sentenced him to 6 months in jail. In two other cases, a total of seven other reporters are appealing federal contempt citations for refusing to give up sources. They all face jail. Most individual states here have laws that protect journalists from naming sources, so-called shield laws. And while there's no federal shield law, the federal government rarely tries to force journalists to give up sources. No one here can remember the last time this many journalists have faced jail. That struggle, too, will be winding its way through our courts in the next few weeks. One last note. Brandon Mayfield, the Portland lawyer thrown in jail falsely, he's not satisfied with a mere apology. He's doing what any self-respecting American lawyer would do. He's suing the government.